But if you did just drop in from Mars and looked at Reading's players in and out, there's no way you'd say, oh, that team are getting parachute payments.
Did he come via Russia?
It's back down to earth for Yap Stams. He watched his side comfortably beaten at Wolves despite dominating possession. We'll look at what changed our opening week wins and what needs to be done before the transfer window slams shut in just over 2 weeks' time. In Pub Chat, we'll discuss whether parachute payments have gone too far, all of that, plus your questions in the mailbag, and a preview of two tricky championship games with Newcastle and Brighton. Hello, welcome to the Tyler Sten Podcast, episode number 98. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetylersten.com. Thank you once again for hitting that download button. Even if you just download it and you turn us off now, the download counts. That's all we care about. It's just the final numbers. What you do with the rest of the show is up to you. But thank you very much for taking time to listen to us this week. Joining me is Mr. Dave Handbags Harris, completing his perfect appearance record so far this season. Dave, hello.
Good evening. I prefer they did listen to us.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously, it would be good if they did. But at the end of the day, we just see the numbers, so we don't get to see how long they listen. We're not one of those radio survey things.
All right, okay.
But yeah, no, please do listen to us.
Each to their own.
Yeah, indeed. It's just the bottom line for me. And that laugh you just heard is a podcasting legend. He is out of semi-retirement. We've got a defensive crisis at the back. We've wheeled him out. It is Mr. Alan West. Westy, welcome back.
Hello. Well, I'm glad to be back as well. I was going to say I didn't want to butt in on you because I'd have been introduced, but it's a bit like when the fans walk into a ground and then walk out in protest. What? Why bother? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Quite.
Just don't come in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. But they've given their money to the club. That's the point. By hitting that download button, you've given your numbers to us. So, you know,
yeah,
same thing.
But, you know, same thing. Bit stupid.
But anyway, how have you been keeping?
Very well, thank you. Hope you lot have been doing well as well.
Not so bad, thank you. Not so bad. Unfortunately, we haven't had such great football to talk about, but then not much has changed since you were a regular on this show.
No. And won't do for some time by the looks of things.
Indeed. Well, it's a good job we've got you on the show as a man who covered the Brendan Rodgers era on the Old Football Fancast, because I think a few of those comparisons are going to creep up on the show today. As I said, lots to talk about, so let's get on with it. Let's head into the recap.
View from the Tarhurst End.
Recapping this week's Championship action.
So, gents, before we get on to that 2-0 defeat at Molineux, just thought I'd get a few of your thoughts on the 2-0 win over Plymouth on Tuesday night in the first round of the EFL Cup, sending us into a round two and a tie with the MK Dons at the Mad Stad in a couple of weeks' time. Westy, you know, this competition traditionally over the years has provided some good little bits of entertainment in the first round. I can remember stuffing Luton and Burton in past years. And this was another comfortable night, really, for Reading. But did we learn anything from it?
I don't know if we learned a great deal. We learned that, obviously, Plymouth are a lot weaker than we are. And other than that, I don't think we got an awful lot out of the game. It was a good... It's one of those games early in the season. You're playing against a lower league side. It's good to have a run out. Again, he's trying to embed his way of playing. They've done that. It was comfortable. Reading never looked like getting beat. And it's pretty much the same as the first game. Second half, Plymouth come into it a little bit more when they started putting pressure on us, but the game was dead and buried by them.
Yeah, Dave, what did you make of the team selection? Because Yap went pretty strong with his team. There were a few little tweaks, but pretty much the same sort of team that we saw against Preston.
Yeah, pretty much. I was fairly pleased with it. If you're trying to embed a new style of play in the side, then you tend to have to go fairly strong in these games. Fair play to him, it came off.
Yeah, the only downside for me about playing such a strong side is you saw in the second half, you could visibly tell everyone was sort of dropping down the gears and not quite giving it 100%. The second half, not a lot of shots on goal. It was very much a case of job done. And it was sort of, it felt really to me like a bit of a pre-season friendly by the end of it. Plymouth just offering so little, they never really threatened to get back in the game. And it was a bit boring for the last 25 or so.
I think, yeah, it was. It'd be nice to see teams at Reading side go for the jugular and 100% all the time. But, you know, it's not always going to happen. As you say, the game was won. Plymouth never really looked like getting into it. They had a couple of little half chances and the one that hit the side netting from the set piece. But otherwise, job done.
Yeah, Westy, what did you make of some of the fringe players on show in this one? We said that Stan played a strong team, but he did give a few opportunities out. Yakola got a go in goal. You had Tanoi Watson playing at fullback. Jake Cooper came in. And Callum Harriott as well, making a full debut as well. What did you make of any of those players? Did any of them put a strong case forward for more regular selection.
Watson, I think, looked decent the two times I've seen him now. A bit light, maybe. Still need to bulk up a little bit, become a bit more of a man. But against Plymouth, they was better players, simple as that. And like you said, they went down the gears as the game went on, and it did turn into a pre-season friendly. And I was going to say, actually, before you mention that, even the first game against Preston, I thought, you know, in large parts, it was quite boring to watch.
Yeah. In Yap, we trust Dave. We, again, a little surprised he didn't go to his bench more. Just the one substitute, Mate, came on for Harriet. We're a bit surprised that you didn't see a couple more youngsters giving a run out.
No, not really. If you're comfortable, then why change it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, again, he's just trying to embed his way of playing, and he hasn't had enough time, especially with some of the newer players, to get them sort of more indoctrinated into what he wants to do. So I think he will play strong sides all through the League Cup.
Yeah, well, as I said, it sets up a tie with the MK Dons. I believe that's on the 20th. It's, again, quite a cheap night at the Mad Stud. I think it's £7 advance for adults, which is always good to see. Unreserved seating as well. Always gives you a nice chance to sit somewhere different. I sat in the West for the first time in a long time.
23rd.
23rd, is it?
23rd.
There we go. Well, you know, that's sort of unprofessional planning that you expect.
The 20th, we'll be playing Brighton.
Correct. It is a Saturday, Saturday the 20th against Brighton. You are indeed correct. I'm going to leave that in the show because everyone deserves to see how unprofessional life plan this show. Moving swiftly on then, as I said, MK Dons in the next round. Reading headed up to Molineux for the first away game in the league under Stam. And unfortunately have headed back with the same number of points. 0. 2-0 to Wolves. A goal either side of half-time, Westy. Were you surprised at all by this result?
I wouldn't say I was surprised. I was interested to see how Reading would cope away from home, because over the last two seasons we have struggled to get wins away from home. Again, the football that Reading play encourages teams, and I said to my friend when we talked about a Preston game a few weeks back, I said the way Reading play encourages teams to play fast pace and try and shut them down quickly, and that's exactly what I think everyone's going to do now going forward, to try and stop us playing at the back, because I don't think we've got the quality of players to play that way all the time.
What do you reckon, Dave?
Quite agree. It was interesting just how comfortable Preston and Plymouth was, given that we weren't really pressured at the back. The acid test was always going to be when a team came onto us and pressured us, and lo and behold, Wolves have pretty much ripped us to shreds.
Yeah, they did it from the first minute. The radio made good commentary, and Becker in her match report sort of backed this up. They were pressing high. Exactly what Reading did to other teams, Wolves did to Reading, and Reading had no real outlet. They were trying desperately to pass it out from the back, but all that was doing was creating chances for Wolves two or three times. You know, Wolves were in because of a Reading mistake. A loose pass or an interception or something like that. They were very reluctant to sort of change things up at all. They were rigidly sticking to that plan. And Yap came out after the game and sort of said, you know, players need to learn when to clear their lines and when to play it. So it's clear he doesn't want things to be completely rigid and, you know, without change. But at the same time, he did want to stick with the mantra. You know, he said, we're not going to change our plans. We're going to stick with it. It's just a case of adapting, so
yeah,
quite right too. And I don't see why he should change his philosophy, particularly after one admittedly pretty poor defeat and performance. The question is, can he learn? Can he learn from it? And certainly, can the players learn from it? Because you know, certainly from the first goal, it's pretty clear that what needed to happen was a foot through the ball, and it didn't happen. Wolves got the ball; they won a corner from the resulting corner. Bit of interplay ended up with the with Reading not really gaining hold of the ball and in the back of the net. So you got to learn when to clear your lines effectively and give yourself a breather.
Yeah, I don't think you can ask El Hafsi to play that much football. Do you know what I mean? I think he made a mistake against Preston where he gave it away and then nearly scored. I think, like I said, Preston started pushing us up high and trying to shut us down quicker. That gave him plenty of joy. Other teams have seen that. They're going to do the same thing. And I think if you're asking El Hafsi to be a sweeper, you are asking for trouble.
Yeah, it's funny. I was joking to one of our assistant editors, Will, who was sat next to me at the Preston game. I said, I almost feel we should have one of those little clocks behind the goal of minutes since Al Habsi Howler. You know, they have days since last accident.
You know it's coming, don't you? At some stage, you know it's coming. But to be fair to him, I mean, he's kept him in that game.
Absolutely.
And against Preston, he made one really quality save that kept us in the game. But you don't want him happen to be making saves from his own mistakes.
And at Wolves as well, he made several great saves. I mean, a couple of them were from his own doing. But, you know, you saw why he played in the Premier League for so many years. He's a fantastic shot stopper.
Yeah.
And the sort of things that caught the eye to the point why he won Player of the Season last year. But at the end of the day,
he's not a sweeper.
No, and he made those errors. A goal either side of the break, the worst possible times you can see. Not that there's ever a good time, but in terms of a particularly bad times, this was it. The first goal, Dave, I don't quite know what Paul McShane was doing when Doherty was cutting in on him.
Well, if you look at it, I don't really place so much 100% blame, shall we say, on McShane, because if you look behind McShane, he's come out to close the man down. Now, firstly, where the hell is Chris Gunter?
Yeah.
But in behind McShane, there's a whole bucket load of space. There's 6 yards, 7 yards, 8 yards of space between McShane and the next defender. Why isn't somebody trying to cut off that, you know, that outlet, as it were, for the fullback? As it is, he's cut inside. McShane can't dangle a foot, because if he does, likely it is he gives away a penalty. If he's not going to win the ball, you've got to have someone backing up to at least block off that outlet for where the player's going to go and put the shot in. So collectively, it was, you know, a collective barrel of laughs, really, for where Wolves are concerned. Such an easy goal for them to score. But let's face it, up until that point, they should have been two or three up.
Yeah, is that the downside of not having traditional 4-4-2 style wingers, Westie? And that obviously there was no Behrens coming back in the way someone like a Kebe in past years, or even a McCleary in more recent times, would have come back and cut down that gap.
Yeah, of course. It's another thing. It's the going forward and coming back. If them two wing strikers, or whatever you want to call them, are doing their job properly, it can work perfectly. But I don't think there's enough of a threat from either of them, really, to cause too much trouble to sides. Because if you've got Kermigan up front of his own, you really need to hit him, because you can't play it over the top of him, because it's a waste of time. So you have to play off him. And they're not really even doing that to a certain extent. And when Rackles up front the first game of the season, I thought it was a complete waste of time.
Yeah, on that, in the first half, I think they managed one shot of note. And by full time, they'd only had one shot on target anyway. So we'll come onto the forward line in just a minute. But the second goal then, if the first was, okay, slightly suspect from the defence, the second one is just, it's just criminal.
It's weak defending.
Corner comes in, and I think it's Jordan Abita's, you know, well beaten to his man by Mason, who just, you know, nods it home from 6 yards, virtually unopposed. Dave, is it too harsh to blame Al-Habsi and say, where was he for this?
I was thinking about this on the way home from out in yesterday, and I genuinely don't necessarily think that is the case. Al-Habsi, yes, he's rooted to his line, but if you look at the positioning of both Kermigan, who is statuesque, and Abita, and where the ball's going, he's not in a position to be able to actually go and claim that ball. If he goes for it, he's climbing over two defenders, and the likelihood is he completely misses it, and then he's to blame. So, you know, you, as a goalkeeper, you've got a gamble. You've got a choice there. You either gamble and go for the ball, or you stay rooted to your line and hope that he's going to be within an area that you're going to be able to be able to save it. Unfortunately, it was right in the corner. Jordan Abita was might as well have not even been there, to be fair, bless him. But so Jan Kermigan as well hasn't exactly covered himself in glory, because he's there on that near post to be able to actually go for that near post header. If you look at the way we've set up, I have studied it. You've got Kermigan there on the near post to try and cut off the near post corner. It's gone to the near post. He's nowhere near it. And Bob, your uncle, 2-0 down.
Yeah, it's weak defending. The Wolves player wanted it more than anyone else, and you end up putting it back on net. It was simple as that.
Yeah, set piece defending from set pieces is a worry for you, Dave. Johnny was tweeting the other day and made a good point that if you look at the three games so far, almost all of the best chances have come from set pieces. There was the one from Preston that Al-Habsi flapped at. Peterborough had a good chance as well as a result of a set piece. Plymouth even. Had a good chance as well from a set piece delivery. And obviously,
we're doing well.
The goal, I know. That the Wolves scored coming from a set play as well. Have Reading got things quite right, or is this something they really need to work on?
Well, every club's different. That's just it. Every club's different. You know, you set up to defend. Presumably, you take a look at exactly what sort of different set piece variations club have, and you set up accordingly. But then you still have your base set up. You know, if you watch Alan Pardew, his teams used to set up with like literally an inverted T, where you'd have three players, one on the near post, one on the far post, one in the middle, and then you'd have one between the penalty area and the 6 yard line. And the penalty spot, sorry, in the 6 yard line, and then one on the penalty spot. They were the zonal markers, effectively. And then you had your man markers. Now, how each team sets up, you have your base set up, you've got to get that right.
Mm. Well, if the defence, again, some question marks. Vandenberg as well coming in for a lot of stick. I think Becker gave him a 4 in the player ratings, and he didn't exactly inspire me with confidence in either of the two home games either. It's clear, I can't be too harsh, because it's clear he's a makeshift. We'll come on to the ridiculous delay in scenario that's going on with Liam Moore in news bites. But Would you be happy with him playing any sort of extended period there, or is the sooner he gets out of there, the better?
Well, it looks like we've got a lot of other choice at the moment. He doesn't seem to like Cooper as a centre-back, it would seem. Maybe because he's, again, I thought back end of last season, Cooper looked a bit ploddy and a bit worrying on the ball, and obviously Stan thinks the same thing. So as it stands at the moment, because we haven't got a lot of centre-backs who can play football, he's going to have to stay there for the foreseeable future until we get someone in.
He's got a feeling of Khalifa Sissé about it, hasn't it?
Yeah. Premier League. He could either be brilliant
I distinctly remember Khalifa Sissé against players that were sort of short and nippy. He did really, really, really well. Man United with Tevez and Rooney up front came in for some rapturous praise in that game, despite losing the game 2-0. But then a couple of games later, we came up against Bolton and Kevin Davies, and he couldn't handle him. I don't think he won a header all game. He's got a feeling of that about it, and I wouldn't want to see him there certainly for anything more than sort of 5 or 6 games.
Yeah, I agree with you, but like I say, at the moment, if he doesn't fancy Cooper, then he's going to be playing there for a while.
Part of me would prefer Cooper. Part of me really would. Yeah, all right, he's not a ball player, but then, you know, you like to think you suit your game to the players, the personnel that you've got. Cooper's not a ball player. I mean, he even showed that against Plymouth. He gave it away horrifically 3 or 4 times throughout the game, when under absolutely no pressure. And, you know, you suit your game to suit. As soon as Cooper gets the ball, you know it's going to go long, and you deal with that.
You miss his aerial presence, so that's one thing you do get with Cooper.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, at Plymouth, he wasn't so great on the floor, but he won absolutely everything in the air.
Yeah.
He's very reliable in the air.
Then there's strong. Then there's the whole argument, though, of are you building a system or are you building a team to get results? And I think Stam, you know, judging again by those post-match comments against Wolves, is very keen to get this system drilled into players. Yeah. And if you go chopping and changing and putting an industrial defender, sorry, Jake, in there, does that not disrupt that whole style?
Well, maybe, but then you can't be ideologically driven either. You can't be 100%, yeah, this is the system and there's no place for a player like Jake Cooper. You know, ultimately, it's a results-based game. And if he doesn't get the results, even though we might be playing pretty football, you're going to end up the same way as Brendan Rodgers did it. Yeah,
exactly.
I think, personally, you have to get the best out of the players you've got available to you. Do you know? And I think that sometimes you have to forego your philosophy to make sure that the best side's out there. And I think a lot of managers, I don't want Yapstam in 5 years' time looking back saying, like Rodgers did, I think I made some mistakes. Because I think Cooper's a good defender. I think aerially he makes you safer, especially at set pieces like we're talking about, and he's a threat going forward. But what worries me is we're going to stick with this ideology and it's not going to work, and by the time we swapped it round, it'd be too late.
It's such a tricky balancing act.
Yeah, it is.
You know, we brought up Brendan a couple of times, and I think Brendan admitted that he said, I thought I had more time to get the system right. I didn't realise results were quite so important so soon. Where do you think the balance lies for Stam?
Well, the problem with Brendan Rodgers is if you're in and around the relegation zone, you know it's not going right. You know, you're not going to get that time. The balance, like you say, it's such a fine balance. And I think, to a degree, you've got to have it on. You've got to base your play around your opponents as much as anything else. You set up with your formation. I'm a firm believer in your formation. This is the way we play. I can't know. It sounds like I've just completely contradicted myself, but this is the way we play. This is you know, go and beat us. But at the same time, your subtle variations in defence and midfield. You set up to suit the opposition, so if they're more direct, then you have a slightly more robust approach yourself. If they're a lot more defensive, then you can play. If they're, you know, if a team sits back, a la Preston, a la Plymouth, then you can start playing around with it a little bit more, but, you know, with purpose. Whereas a team like Wolves, who came at us and you know, were in our faces, you know, right in our defensive faces, that's where you need to really sort of knuckle down and grind out a result, as it were.
Okay, well, we're talking about the system and the style of football. You know, we mentioned again at the top of this section, Reading a lot of possession. Again, they had 66% of it, but managing only one shot on target. Wester, we touched on the forwards a little bit earlier. Roy Behrens, for me, was fantastic against Plymouth. He looked like at times he was playing a game of FIFA. He had the fullback just completely on toast. But again, in this one, just not seemed to get in the game. John Swift, who's been, you know, revelation so far this season in games at Vodafone Stadium, was a little bit off the ball. Still probably one of our better players at Molineux, but couldn't quite influence the game before. And Jan Kermigan, I forgot he was playing.
Yeah, I think, again, striker-wise, we were really struggling, not only to score goals, but to have any impact on matches. I think when Kerbin came on against Preston, he was better than Reckles, but he still wasn't great. And Reckles clearly can't play up front on his own. And the other guy, the French guy we haven't seen yet, maybe he'll make a difference, but I can't see him being a player that's going to score 20 goals.
Mendes
and frighten people. I don't see it happening. And to get them sort of players, you have to spend a fortune. It ain't good, and that's not going to happen either. So
yeah, would you give Matey a little bit more of a go? We've seen a couple of cameos. I thought he looked very lively against against Plymouth. He looked very lively and came on, and apparently was again one of our better players up at Wolves.
If performances carry on the way they did, like they did against Wolves, then you've got to change it and you've got to give them a go. And if you're certainly a lively performer, then give them a go. The one thing that struck me with the wide players in total, he came on and played wide. You had Harriet and you had Roy Beer. As skillful as they were, there wasn't that much in the way of end products. But, you know, even against Plymouth, when they were given a lot of time, a lot of space, when the space opened up against Preston. And that was slightly concerning for me, in that we got these players... and they're not creating the chances when given a golden opportunity to do so.
Yeah, and Jack Killick sort of touched on that. He sent his thoughts on the game. He said, I went up to Wolves on Saturday and I was really disappointed. Players looked a bit clueless as to the system Stan wanted them to play, and the defending was awful, especially for the second goal. Not really any positives to take from the game, to be honest. However, it's going to take time for the players to adapt to Stan's system, but it's evident that we need some new defenders and a striker. Whether they had the same service as Kermigan had on Saturday, don't think it would matter who you had up top.
Yeah, I agree with that, but you still have to have somebody who can cause teams a threat sometimes on their own.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Agree. Like when Dicky Force is a player, because he was so quick and skillful, he'd give teams something to worry about. But I don't think Reading's strike line give anyone anything much to worry about, which encourages them to press forward and shut us down quickly. There's no ball over the top, so you think, well, it doesn't matter how far we go up the pitch, this line ain't going to beat us.
Yeah. Hard to add to that. Notorious, who does the Away Days video, you can check out their adventures at Wolves up on thetalisman.com now. He says, obviously not going to judge, but that was diabolical. So you are going to judge.
Straight in with judgment there.
Short passing backwards the whole game, no clue.
Another thing that worries me as well, that when you, traditionally, when you go and watch Reading at home, the fans are quite impatient. And if Reading drop 1-0 down, I would love to see the reaction of the fans if Reading start passing it backwards and sideways, because it won't take them long to get fed up with that. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, I'm just saying I know Reading fans and they won't put up with that for too long.
And we talked about this in pre-season, didn't we, Dave? We said, how long will they give it before they turn on Stam in the Rogers way? And I hate to say this, and it is just a very small, but I'm already seeing some people on social media already saying, oh no, we've got to play differently, yada, yada, yada. I don't. Does the fan base have the patience to go through this project?
Well, history suggests no, doesn't it? But they're going to have to be. You know, if the club are going to give Stam time, they're going to have to ignore what the fan base want. And the fan base will always. If I can allude to individual players, for example, you know, supporters never really took to someone like Sulky Hill, for example, who was insanely skillful, but perceived to be a little bit lazy, in inverted commas. And yet they love the limited but 100% wholeheartedness of a Phil Parkinson.
Yeah.
You know, that's the sort of supporter that we have at the club.
What was your take on them two players, where were you?
I loved them both.
Yeah, I loved them both. I used to think Sol was great, but he was a little bit lazy, or perceived to be lazy.
Yeah, he was.
But
he was.
It's a bit like
he was a luxury player.
If you ever watch Ronaldo, you don't see him job back too often because he was such a threat to the other team that it doesn't matter what he does,
exactly.
They watch him. And Phil Parkinson, like I say, he wasn't much of a footballer, but he'd give you all he had.
Absolutely.
But I think Reading fans would traditionally go with Phil Parkinson over Sol any day of the week.
I like to think that, you know, speaking personally, I'm pragmatic enough to try and understand what a manager is trying to do, what the requirements are, you know, week by week and game by game basis, you know, even, you know, on a minute by minute basis throughout the game. I can't, and this is going to sound so big-headed, but I can't see that there are many Reading fans that are actually like that. They see their own, they have their own philosophy on the game. I don't necessarily have that, but supporters have their own philosophy on the game, and they expect the manager to suit that, and that's where the frustration comes from, I think.
I think just win. And everyone's happy.
Yeah.
It's what concerns me is when they're not winning, how quickly they're turning, and when they've took 8 passes and they've all gone backwards.
Well, I said this last week, and that is why that win over Preston was so important, and to a lesser extent the Plymouth one as well, because it gives Stan that little bit of breathing room right from the start. He can point to the fact, well, look how we played against Preston. Look at the result that got. And he can talk to players in the dressing room saying, play like he did against Preston, we're going to get results. The key here is how they bounce back. And unfortunately, they've got two of probably the hardest fixtures you could have asked for. And we'll come on to those later. Newcastle away and then Brighton at home. They don't come much tougher than that in this division. So that's going to be a real test of their sort of discipline and how much they stick to it. And also the fans' patience as well, because you could quite easily see them losing two of those games. And then suddenly you're on a three-game losing streak. And yeah, you've really got to deliver. So not ideal, but, you know, as I said, it's always interesting as well just to look at what the Wolves fans or any opposition fans are saying about your team. And the Wolves fans were not very complimentary about Reading, saying they were, you know, just didn't turn up, said they were useless. really, no words minced on this occasion.
Yeah. I don't necessarily, forgive me, if there are any Wolves fans listening, I offer no apologies, but there are... You look at Wolves fans' reactions as a collective after any game, and they're never complimentary towards Reading. They don't like us. They'll never admit that, you know, that they care much for us, but they certainly don't like us. But then again, I suppose that you could argue that they're like that with any club. But I do think that the majority of Wolves fans as a collective are a bit dim.
Really. Yeah, okay.
Fair enough.
Sorry, Wolves fans, if you want to respond to Dave at the Tarlest End on Twitter, we'll pass on those bits of feedback next week.
I thought he was quite restrained.
He was very well.
I think Dim was good.
Family friendly there.
They should have took that on the chin.
From what you've seen so far of the Championship, Westy, we are very early on in the season. We are two games in, plus, you know, a handful of cup games and pre-season friendlies along the way. But looking at what you've seen from Reading so far, are you concerned that they're not up to the sort of standard, or do you think that they've got, you know, every chance of mixing it?
I think let's turn it into positive now. I think from the players that they've brought in, they look young and they do look decent. It's just anything concerns me is, like I say, the defence, I'm not sure they can play football like they're going to be asked to. So am I concerned? Yes. Am I optimistic? Yes.
Well, there you go. Good note to end on. Okay. Well, we'll talk about efforts to improve that defence and one Liam Moore in News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
So we'll come on to the transfer speculation in just a moment. But first, a couple of news around the club. And Tiger's been given a few media interviews of late to the media. Obviously, he spoke to a fans group, including myself and Dave, earlier in the summer. So not an awful lot of new stuff, but just sort of reinforcements of what he sort of said behind closed doors and a bit more stuff on the public record. He was talking about the training ground at Bearwood. It's been a topic of hot discussion ever since sort of work seemed to grind to a halt. Tiger has basically firmed up, you know, why that's happening. He said there's been design changes and they're investigating different ways of doing things. So it is sort of on hold. Definitely not scrapped, by a sense of imagination. They will lose their Category 1 status if it's not well underway in the next 3 years. So, and they, again, stressed how important that was. But if you were hoping for the new training ground to be open anytime soon, I think you're going to be waiting a while. Gents, worried at all by the lack of progress?
No, not overly. I don't think these things happen. There could be any reason for delaying a training ground build. I'm sure they've got the money for it. It's just whether they can get it going.
Well, that's just it. Slightly worried because the rumours at the end of last season and throughout the summer was that we didn't have a great deal of money. All right, we've been given a three-year window, effectively, between now and the next category appraisal. But, you know, it all comes down to when they actually start properly building it, and when everything's sort of really on the go down there, and then we'll be all right. But until then, until we actually get you know, diggers and brickies and plumbers and whoever else down there doing their bits and bobs, it'll be a little bit of a concern for me, and that concern will only escalate as time goes on.
Yeah, well, one way of possibly raising the funds for that training ground or for work to continue.
Crowdfunding.
Yeah, well, that is one way, but they're crowdfunding us, Dave, so they can't support two things at once.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. More important stuff.
Indeed. And you can head over to the link posted to this episode if you do want to join in our crowdfunding. Anyway, that shilling aside, one way Reading might raise funds, probably significantly more funds, is selling the stadium naming rights. We've talked about this a few times. It just seems, you know, Charles Watts, our Tarlhurst End podcast extra co-host, tweet to say it's a case of when.
Yeah, a matter of time.
Rather
stuff,
than if. Any feelings changed on it?
No.
I couldn't care less.
No.
What it's called.
Now, especially
if,
now,
if it was Elm Park, I think I'd have more of a problem with it. But you know, it's the Medeski Stadium. It's you know, metal clad lump of plastic seats, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Concrete next to a motorway. Yeah.
And at least now we've got the Eamon Dolan stand.
Exactly.
So there will always be.
I think you probably end up with a John Medeski stand as well at some stage. So
yeah, you could quite easily see that happening.
Yeah.
So again, one to keep an eye on. And again, if it raises money and it gets us players such as Liam Moore, I am all for it. Now, this one has been dragging on. This is getting to Tommy Smith territory in terms of it seems to be done and then it's not. The whole Leicester saga is running about a couple of seven-figure sums rejected by Leicester. Quite why they're rejecting these bids, I don't know. It's not like they're short of cash with their Champions League ambitions or whatnot.
It's a random one, isn't it? I see he replied to some tweets from some of the fans the other week telling him to sign a contract and stop being so money grabbing or whatever else it was, and he said to him, I just want to play football.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't get it. I don't get what the hold up with is on Leicester's side. I mean, if they're gonna reject bids for a player who's not in their squad and hasn't even got a squad number.
Yeah, they clearly don't want him.
What's the point? You know, what good are you doing? You know, it's just bizarre.
Yeah, you can understand financial prudency, but by the sounds of it, they're quibbling over sort of hundreds of thousands rather than millions here.
Unless they're waiting until the last minute and hope someone else comes and offers them a couple of million.
On that, there are clubs reported interested. Bristol City, where he spent time on loan, are apparently monitoring the situation. Leeds as well, who've had a shocking start under Gary Monk, they're also in the frame. The latest seems to be that I think Leicester basically want him to sign a new deal and sign a loan with Reading. Now, the only thing I can think of here, Dave, is that they think that Moore is going to develop into a player much better than he is, and that they're worried about losing him on the cheap.
But what good are you going to do if the player doesn't want to stay there?
Yeah.
Simple as that. You know, for God's sake, Leicester, pull your finger out your backside and bloody sell him to us.
Yeah, we really need him.
We
Although,
do.
In saying that, given the way Leicester played against Hull,
they might
soon need him. That was an awful start for them.
Not ideal, was it?
Could they? Am I being too overdramatic in saying that they could quite easily suffer the sort of collapse that happened to Reading in their second season in the Premier League? Albeit this their third season.
You're not, no. It only takes, it only takes the rest of the Premier League to work out how Leicester play and counteract that, and they've lost some significant players. Haven't replaced them with players quite to the calibre as players like Kante were. There's no reason why they can't be in a relegation.
Same with Reading and Sidwell. It was only really Sidwell was the only real personnel difference.
Yeah.
Not only that, they've got Champions League football now as well. That's going to take out of them. So.
And let's face it, you know, with the majority of that squad, they were in a relegation battle just the season before.
Hmm.
What a story that'd be, though, relegated the year after winning.
So I'd take it, though, given the fact I'd just seen a season of Premier League, Champions League football and won the league. I think you'd take that all day long.
I think I'd take lots of things at the moment.
Okay, well, let's move away from Leicester and Liam Moore. Again, one to track. Hopefully, we'll chat with Charles Watts about that and have a deal to report by Friday. Apologies, by the way, for no podcast extra. If you didn't catch our tweet, Charles had parental responsibilities and had a few tech problems in the office as well, so he couldn't find time for a show. So apologies, we will hope to be back with that show this week, though, all things being well. But one player who could be leaving the Medeski Stadium is Chris Gunter. Now, he's had a great start to the season, by his standards at Reading anyway, and he's been linked with a move to Derby. Hull also still lingering in the frame as well. Again, this fee of around £1.2 million being mooted. Reportedly, that's what his get-out clause calls for. Basically, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, Dave, sort of saying, would you be too gutted to lose him? You've seen three games from him so far this season. How has his importance gone up or down?
At the moment, his importance is right sky high because he's absolutely imperative to the side. With his runs going forward, he offers something to the attack at the moment. And as we said last week, you know, he actually seems to have learned how to cross the ball properly rather than sort of giving it the old dinked butterfly effort. defensively, he's been pretty sound as well this season so far. I mean, his time with Wales in the summer seems to have done wonders for him. But then again, also, let's take a look at the fact that he almost certainly wants to move. There's no reason why you would take a pay cut and also take a reduction in your release clause if you didn't really want to move. So it wouldn't surprise me to see him go somewhere else Championship, Championship, Premier League, wherever, between now and the end of August.
How would you feel about Tanoy Watson being first choice right back for the rest of the season?
I think it'd probably be too early for him in his development to be going straight in, taking Gunter's place. I think it'd be a shame if he left. I think you'd do well to replace him for what you're going to get for him. Like I say, Gunter is not the greatest player in the world, but as Championship standard goes, he's probably one of the better. And you'd do well, like I say, to replace him for £1 million.
Yeah, that's the one downside of this whole transfer window being open, is that when players start well, fly under the radar, and then, oh, the window's shut, sorry, we've got him.
Not that, he's one of our more experienced players, and I think we've got a lot of young players in that team at the moment who probably would need someone like that.
Mate, the captain side. The side on Tuesday night against Peterborough, Plymouth. again, it shows that Stam's got a lot of faith in him. If he thought he's definitely out or he's a bad influence, I don't think he'd be giving him the armband.
I think he's a bad influence, picking up on that point. But
no, I'm not saying he is, but that's what I'm saying.
I get what you're saying. At this moment in time, I'd be a little bit disappointed if we left and we didn't have a replacement lined up, put it that way.
You've got to think he's been scouting, though, and having a look.
It's got to be. Got to be.
Yeah. Just in case of getting it done. And that is, again, it's the brain when you're a small fish, is that you've got to wait for someone else to make the move, because you can't go out and sign these players until the dotted line has been signed by these players leaving. We've seen it over the years. We've seen it with Stephen Hunt, Nicky Shorey. Happens time and time again, which is why, in my opinion, the Chancellor winner should shut before the start of the season. I don't think too many people will disagree with that.
No, I think you'd be quite right.
I'd say it's one for pub chat, but I think we've just discussed it in about 10 seconds. So
we all agree.
Briefest pub chat anyway. We'll be in and out the pub straight away, one of those revolving doors.
If you don't agree at home, let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just thought I'd wrap up News Bites with some sad news.
Oh.
Hal Robson-Kanu still hasn't got a club, guys.
I reckon people must have been watching the videos as we read his performances over the last three seasons.
Yeah, they left the DVD on too long, and they sort of fell asleep during the, they thought, it's great for Wales, and they sort of woke up and it was the Reading bit.
Yeah, I think, Robson Carney has been sending out the clips from his Welsh performances and not his Reading ones, and I think someone must have looked in the archives and thought, hang on.
Ideal speculation here, Dave, but do you think this is to do with he's waiting for the right deal, or do you think that maybe he's not quite the hot property that he thought he was?
Well, it's interesting because there's an article on the BBC that I read today, and the new Wales assistant manager has been speaking about it, and he's basically said exactly that, the move's got to be right for Hal Robson-Kanu. I'm not sure.
I think Robson-Kanu is looking...
£100,000 a week offers from China. Okay.
Yeah, I think he's looking for a retirement contract.
He's doing himself absolutely no favours at all, because he's going to have to, he's had no real pre-season training. He's been away with Wales. He's not got a chance to bed in. He's not doing himself any favours. But then again, if he gets a four-year deal, I don't think he'll care about making friends in the first three weeks.
I think Robson-Kanu has played a very, very shrewd one here. I think he will get a nice little retirement contract and you'll never see anything
absolute
off him again.
Pie in the sky. If he came back to Reading saying, I want to play for Reading again on... I think the rumours were he was on about £30,000 a week.
He'd arguably be our best striker.
If he came back and said, I will play for what I played for last season, I want to stay at the club, I'll sign a new deal for what I was before, would you take him?
No, doesn't play enough games.
Dave?
Although he probably would be our best striker. That silence says yes, he would take him.
It's one of those ones that you just weigh up, isn't it? For 3.5 years, he did absolutely sod all on his bumper contract. And then 6 months before the end of his contract, starts putting in performances. I mean, can we really afford to have such a...
Was going to be my argument.
A player that is just going to be carried like
can't,
that.
Can't trust him.
You can't trust him.
Robson Kanu will vanish once he gets a new contract. You won't see no more of him.
He could go anyway. He could be a star. He could be okay, or he could be useless. And that's the problem. I just do not know. I've watched him for, 7 years now, and I don't know where the real Robson-Kanu is. Is it the guy that won 2 straight Underachiever Awards, or is it the guy that's scoring goal of the tournament of the Euros? I don't know. And unfortunately, in Reading's position, they can't take gambles like that. So I wouldn't take him back. But, if you disagree, drop us a tweet to thetylerstead@gmail.com for emails, rather, or at the Tylerst End if you're sending us a tweet. Right, that wraps up News Bites. We're going to move on to Pub Chat now, where we are going to look at the issue of parachute payments.
The Tylerst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
So, parachute payments, gents. They are a topic that divides fans up and down the country and those working in the game as well. Yap Stam's come out in a newspaper article a couple of weeks ago saying that he's not a fan of them. He wants them scrapped, despite the fact Reading are actually receiving them this season. It's getting a nice juicy $10 million from the Premier League. If you are thinking, what is he talking about? We haven't got any diving or air shows going on. What are these parachute payments? They are the money received by relegated clubs from when they go down from the Premier League. So you get relegated and you get basically money to soften the blow, hence parachute payments. Now, clubs back in the day used to get them. Initially, they were for two seasons. Then they increased, I think, to three. And then Reading, you know, have been getting them for four seasons. The whole idea, like I said, soften the blow because you make a big financial investment when you go up to the Premier League. The Premier League want you to sign good players. They don't want you to be scared. Because obviously, if you sign a player, you know, on a three-year contract worth 40 grand a week, if you go down, you'd be with a massive drop of revenue that you get between Premier League and Championship, you'd be stuffed. So the whole idea is, don't worry, if you get relegated, you've got some extra money to pay off those contracts. So don't be afraid to pay. And from the Premier League's point of view, they want that because if clubs are scared to spend any money when they go up, all you get is a situation where teams are, you know, don't invest in players, they're not competitive with the big boys, and you start getting cricket scores. So that's the Premier League's point of view. At the moment, the teams that have just come down, including Newcastle, who we will be playing on Wednesday night, are receiving around 80-odd, 90-odd million over the next 3 years from the Premier League.
That's if they stay down.
That's if they stay down. Yeah, they'll get 40 million in the first season, 32.5 million in the second season, and 17.5 million in the third season. That goes down to just two seasons worth of payments if you're a team that's gone up and gone straight back down. And if you go back up, you lose them. You don't get paid them anyway. No. Which is doesn't matter because you're getting millions of Premier League money anyway. So, you know, we're staring at a situation here where Burton are in the same division as the team who are getting an extra 40 million this season. Is that fair? Is it right? And what needs to be done to make it fair?
I think no, it's not fair. No, it's not right. And the Premier League needs to encourage clubs, the 20 clubs there in that division, to manage their finances prudently. Obviously, they sell collective TV rights for, I think it's, what is it, £90 million per club this season, which is astronomical. Players' wages, as we know, are one of the biggest drivers behind it. And the Premier League turn around and say, as you quite rightly say, that you know, as part of the spectacle and the marketing, they need the high profile players to play there. As it is, they've got, you know, many high profile managers this season, and I can imagine Scudamore sitting there rubbing his hands with glee, given you know the title and the Champions League battle that's going to ensue this season. But when it comes to down the bottom end, you know, the also-rans and the clubs that are highly likely to get relegated, simple fact of the matter is you have to manage your finances correctly. And quite frankly, it means that if you go down, then you have to take the blow and deal with it. And given a club a financial advantage from every other club in the division so that they can keep the players that effectively failed the season before, which is morally wrong as far as I'm concerned.
What do you think, Wes? Do you think it's right to, you know, some people, we had an article up on the website a couple of weeks ago discussing this very issue, and, you know, the parachute payments have been labelled by some as a reward for failure.
I think, again, you can see why they give them money to go down, because it does, in many ways, it helps the Premier League remain relatively competitive, where you can have a bottom team get a result against one of the top sides. If you took that money away and they had to ship all their players out, then all of a sudden they're going to come back up again and get relegated, and you're just going to have the same teams going up and down, or teams that are nowhere near strong enough to stay in the Premier League getting relegated every year. So I understand why they do it. Is it unfair? Yes, it is unfair. But you've got big clubs in the Premier League anyhow that have massive revenues that you can never compete with anyway. So do we have to look at that? Do we have to say, okay, we'll give the smaller teams in the Premier League more TV money than the big ones, and that ain't going to happen?
I'm not sure I'm an advocate of that. You'd end up with a model that's All right.
Well, it's a bit like the American one.
It's American draft.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're the worst team.
I was going to say Spain, but of course that's completely different, as in because you had Real Madrid and Barcelona creaming off 85% of the market because it's individual rights negotiations. I wouldn't be an advocate of that at all. What I'd be an advocate of would be for the Premier League, for that money that gets given to the three relegated clubs to actually be redistributed between the 24 clubs in the Championship, and then you have a more even playing field. Then, effectively, you raise the income from all the clubs. All right, it's not it's shared, but you've got 280 million pound that's shared between the 24 clubs. It obviously includes the three relegated clubs, but those clubs that are on the cusp of being relegated, who know that they're likely to be on the cusp of being relegated, are encouraged to sort their finances out effectively.
Yeah, but is that not slightly unrealistic? I mean, obviously there's probably a group of, what we'll say, eight Premier League teams at the moment who no real danger of going down. But other than that, as we saw with Newcastle and Villa last year, you've played in the Premier League for 10 years, you're solid, you think, great, we're in no danger of going down. Suddenly you go down, you might go bust.
Well, bad luck. They haven't run the club correctly within the revenue streams of the divisions that they're likely to be in.
But what you're saying is then a club needs to operate with a budget that can work in the Championship next season.
Well, they need to have a relegation budget, don't they?
They certainly need a contingency budget.
But it's such a big gap.
It is. But, that's the problem that you have with the Premier League in this day and age. It's gone, from my perspective, the financial reward has gone way too far. The disparity between the Football League and the Premier League is huge. It's an absolute chasm. It's gone too far. And the clubs that are going down, apart from those like Burnley, and I'd say Brighton, if they went up and came down, and I'd like to say Reading, but it wasn't us because we mismanaged our finances when we came down. Clubs like that who have got their finances in order, they've invested strategically, wisely, sensibly, had a contingency plan that every not just football club, but sound organisation should have. That's the way that it needs to be run.
I think if you look at the Championship now, it reflects quite a bit the Premier League probably 15 years ago, when the teams that went up in general went straight back down, or at least two of the three. I mean, the good thing is now teams do come up from the Championship and they survive. You know what I mean? It's not always they're guaranteed to get relegated, because they're not. All right, they might finish bottom half, but they do tend to stay up now. Whereas if you look at our league, you can pretty much say the teams with the lowest budgets will end up down the bottom of the Championship. There's always the odd one that beat that rule. In general.
We'll take Reading's last promoted team, for example. Without the parachute payments, Reading probably, because now knowing what we know about Anton's finances, they probably wouldn't have signed anyone, because they would have been, well, we can't afford it. And Reading would have got into a situation of having an awful team that just would have got smashed every week.
Well, that's where you need your relegation release clause, your relegation wage reduction clauses. They are the biggest driver, as we know, behind football finances, is the wages. They'll have had, the majority of the players, in fact, every single player, will have had a promotion increase. They should have had a relegation increase inserted into their contract. I can't believe they didn't. That says that they went down to the wage they were on when they were back in the Premier League, unless they signed a new contract. Harold Sankano, for example. There's no question that he had a significant increase on his Championship wage. We signed Royston Drenthe. We signed Danny Williams, who is reportedly one of the highest earners at the club. We didn't manage it sensibly. If we'd have managed it sensibly, then I can't see that there's any reason why we should have been in financial danger. But of course, as we know, that season in the Premier League, you had a certain Mr. Zingarevic gambling with the club's future. And in the second season, by all accounts, gambled with the parachute payments.
And that's all well and good if players are prepared to accept those sort of deals. But, how are you going to attract the best players? Because even if you offer them a reduction, a player's not going to sign for 50 grand a week and then say, actually, in the Championship, we can only afford to pay you 10.
Believe.
No, player's not. Yeah, but then he'll be like, well, what if you don't sell me? I'm suddenly going to lose most of my money. It's not my fault. And then you've got a massive problem of a load of disgruntled players at the club. You might not be able to shift. And I don't know that they'd come in the first place, because they wouldn't be prepared to gamble.
But then if every club did that, Would they have that much of a choice?
Yeah, but every club won't do that. That's what I'm saying.
It has to be a collective, and that's not going to happen, is it? I think, unfortunately, most of the money that's gone into football has either gone on wages or buying for players, teams, and that is the problem.
Like Reading, like Zingarevich did, they will gamble, and all that will happen is you'll see clubs going bust left, right and centre.
The issue that I have with that is that if a player does that, and you have, say, 50% of the clubs that are prepared to offer 50k and then, you know, if they get relegated, still on 50k, and 50% of the clubs that offer them 50k, but 10k if they get relegated, that's severely decreasing the pool of clubs that player has available to them. And are they really realistically going to do that when, you know, to all intents and purposes, it sounds like if you're going to have Burnley, as I said, you know, doing the sensible thing, and Newcastle not doing the sensible thing, by all accounts, when they got relegated in 2009, they didn't have relegation release clauses in their contracts. You know, all right, Newcastle v Burnley, it's pretty much a no-brainer if you get the bid from Newcastle. But if it's Newcastle v Villa, for example, and say Villa do and Newcastle don't, you're going to discount the club that says we're going to reduce your contract to £10,000 and go to Newcastle, a club that is effectively, mortgaging its future, shall we say.
Okay, here's just, and I posted in the comments, again, of the parachute payment article we had up on the thetarlesson.com. My idea was that every season a club nominates, say, an arbitrary number, say 10 contracts at the start of the season, that if they get relegated, the Premier League will then offer to cover 75% of them. So basically you say, these 10 players, if we go down, we know we realistically can't afford their wages, you'll pick them up. It does two things. It allows you to sign players, and then if they go down, you've not got the, you know, say you sign a player on 75 grand a week, you know you're going to be able to afford it because you're only going to pay 15 grand a week. But what it also does, it stops clubs just getting massive amounts of money. Because say Newcastle go down and they actually get rid of all their high earners and make big transfer profits on them, they've just got this cash. Whereas if you just attach it specifically to players, if they get rid of them, the players are off the wage books, great. And you're not benefiting by just having this massive wad of cash thrown at you from the Premier League.
Is that not just parachute payment by default, though?
Yeah, it's just still getting the money. And I think also, if I was in a relegation...
No, but you're not, because all you're getting is the money to support that particular player. And then if that particular player, like you said, Dave, wants to leave, he goes, you don't necessarily make the money off it.
Yeah, but then wouldn't it encourage you to say, OK, we're going to sign this player because we look like we're going to get relegated for like 200 grand a week, we'd never normally get.
Exactly.
And then you can pay the bill for that.
So Reading, in 2013, January, you know, we're looking like we're going down. Say we go out and sign, I don't know, Gylfi Sigurdsson, and we offer him £80,000 a week and he signs for us. 6 months later, you know, we've said that he's going to be one of those contracts. You know, we've still got a player that's £80,000 a week. Is that really fair on the rest of the division?
But that's what current parachute payments give you at the moment. I'm just sort of suggesting sort of a more towards a halfway house rather than just getting all this cash.
You still have to take responsibility for that wage, don't you? You can't just say, actually, you pay it.
Exactly.
Okay.
It encourages budgetary imprudence.
Yeah.
I agree, but what I'm saying, but from my point of view, is I don't think it's realistic to expect Premier League teams to try and compete in the Premier League unless they've got that safety net. Not unless, as you say, Dave, the whole model is changed so that Championship clubs are getting more money, which, you know, is a completely separate argument. I think we'd all, as Championship fans, love to see. I think every single fan outside the Premier League would love to see their club getting more money from it and a better share of the revenue. But we've got to be realistic. It's a money-making business.
You're absolutely right, realistically. But, you know, we're not talking realistically. We're talking ideologically here, aren't we?
Things, it doesn't really make no difference how much money you get. It's pretty much all of it is going to go into the same thing. It's going to wages and buying players.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if you give them nothing, it's still going to wages and buying players. They'd find some other way of financing it.
Mm. The nice thing is that, as we've said, teams that don't get parachute payments have got promoted. Reading weren't getting parachute payments when they won the league a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Southampton weren't getting parachute payments when they won the league a few years ago.
No.
So they came second to us, sorry. And Burnley, I think, had just run out of parachute payments when they went up a couple of years ago under Sean Dyche.
Yeah, and you've got Brighton, Derby, clubs like that are consistently challenging at the top end.
So it's not the... And we've seen teams with parachute payments get relegated. Wigan have got relegated. Blackpool. Wolves have got relegated. Blackpool have got relegated. So it's not the be-all and end-all. It's, as you say, it's the financial management. You wouldn't have known that Reading were getting parachute payments over the last four seasons based on the squad and the amount of money we've spent. You wouldn't have a clue. If you just dropped in the mysterious man from Mars always drops into random scenarios. But if you did just drop in from Mars and looked at Reading's players in and out, there's no way you'd say, oh, that team are getting parachute payments.
Did he come via Russia?
I have no idea. on the run, Anton. So, again, like you say, it's completely down to how clubs individually manage. Personally, just to wrap it up, I'm in favour of them. I think they need a tweaking to sort of be more of a parachute rather than giving clubs an excuse to spend loads of money.
They're a prop up, aren't they?
So I think they need tweaking, but I don't think you can get rid of them at all.
I think to keep the Premier League competitive, you do have to give them a certain amount of money to make sure that they've got an opportunity to come back strong rather than weak.
And Dave?
I think realistically, they certainly need tweaking because they give the clubs that come down a huge, huge advantage over the clubs, the other clubs in the division. You look at the transfer fees that Newcastle have splashed out, and to an extent Villa as well. For them to receive what 40, 32 and a half, 17 and a half over three seasons, that just ain't right. That's more than some budgets in the Championship alone, and that's it's rewarding failure far too much. For a club to need that level of money, it's just nigh on stupidity. And there's clearly no business continuity if the club gets relegated. Yeah,
The sad thing is, though, is that under the current model, and I don't want to linger too much on this, we have got a big mailbag, but the sad thing is if you do take a club and they go in with the sort of prudence that you're talking about in the Premier League, they get punished because they're just beaten by the teams that gamble.
Well, wouldn't they also have a decent parachute payment for teams that come out of the Championship to make them competitive, to make the Championship stronger when they come back up? Wouldn't it trickle down further? Use the money further down the line.
Well, they're already talking about the bigger gap now between the Championship and League One.
That's what I'm saying. It's huge. That's what I was talking about earlier. The Championship has become like the Premier League of 15 years ago, where teams get into it and they struggle to stay in it.
Okay, how would you fit again? I'm sort of delving deeper into this issue and I want to get out. But what would you say about then a system of either licensing or a Premier League 2, where you were only ever guaranteed to fall a certain way, lob off the rest of the Football League, and you've just got two divisions of 18.
No. Close shop. No. Just no.
No.
No. Okay, I'll stop going if that happened.
Bold. There you go. Fair enough. Okay, well, we've...
Unless we're winning it, then I'll go.
Plenty of thoughts there. Please let us know your thoughts. Are you in favour of parachute payments? Are you against them? Do they need tweaking? Have you got better ideas? The mine that was quickly shot down in flames in seconds. Get your thoughts into thetarlehurstend@gmail.com or on Twitter too, @thetarlehurstend. And plenty of people have got in touch, not on parachute payments, but on more general issues. We'll get to those in the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
@thetarlehurstend
and facebook.com/thetarlehurstend.
So once again, a big thank you to everyone who has got in touch via all of the methods I've been plugging consistently throughout the show. Let's get on with it. Just FM saves. Harry says, was I the only one disappointed not to see Liam Kelly or Tenai Watson feature at Wolves?
No, Liam Kelly and Tenai Watson were disappointed as well. So no, you wasn't the only one.
No. Liam Kelly, he's been on the bench a few times, Dave. Not got on yet.
He has, yeah. I think he's on the bench purely because Stan's waiting for the right moment for him to bring him on, presumably when we were absolutely annihilating the side, which hasn't actually happened. Having said that, I would have liked to have seen him come on for the last 15, 20 minutes against Plymouth. But of course, as we all know, 2-0, dangerous lead, cliche alert. You know, only takes one goal and bang, you're in trouble. As it was, Tenai Watson, in the two home games, looked very accomplished. As I said last week against Preston, was very nervy at points, made some incorrect decisions at times. I'd have liked to have seen Liam Kelly on the pitch though as well.
Yeah, and I think Stam likes him, that's for certain. He spoke highly of him in the newspaper recently. So I think you will see him at some stage, but like I said, I just think he's waiting for the right time to put him on the pitch.
Yeah, and good set piece as well, which will be very nice to see.
Yeah, we can do that.
Hoop says, defeated Wolves is a great reality check. Mid-table at best this season. Chill out, folks.
Yeah, pretty much what we were saying last week. It ties in quite nicely in that, you know, let's not judge anything until we actually, we're sort of 6 months into the season, or we've seen the system bed in.
Jimbo says Joe Vandenberg is not a centre back in this league. Performance had Brendan vibes. Players not comfortable in the style they're asked to play.
Yeah, again, I think we pretty much covered that in the start of the show. I think it is very much Brendan Rodgers esque, but with a better side, but still not a side that's capable of playing that sort of football, I don't think.
Yeah, who are the players not suited for the Stam style? Have you Well, Yapstam, and you were looking at that squad now, who would you set? Who would you just completely? Would you write off anyone as just saying he's just never going
to
work in
this
side?
I think personally, that to play that way that Stan wants to play, you have to have some really good footballers. I mean, you don't even see top European sides playing that style of football always. Some of the big clubs do, yes, but not everybody.
I think there are two players that immediately spring to mind, and one is Paul McShane.
Yep.
I don't think he's a ball player. He's a good, solid British. Don't get me wrong. He's a great defender, but he's not a ball playing central defender.
He's another one. But only there. But he's another one who, again, like you said, he's a steady Premier League defender. Has been down the years.
Yeah.
A good Championship defender, but international level, he doesn't really get a look in.
Ask him to play it out the back as well, and I think you're asking for trouble. I really do.
Okay. Who's the other one?
And this is going to be possibly quite controversial. Danny Williams. Danny Williams, I think, is a much more hurly-burly, in-your-face, tackling, gets hold of the ball and drives type of player rather than a passing midfielder.
Yeah, he's a cut and thrust. I think when Reading went from a different style, when McGee came in, I know it was a long time ago now, but they went from a style of playing lower league football, and then all of a sudden McGee asked them to play football. What he'd done, he put Dovcek in, who could play proper football, was a proper giving the ball, spray, spray, spray. And they haven't got that sort of play at the moment. Then he sort of added Tom Jones and Kevin Dillon and players like that who could play football.
Darius, there's a place for you.
Yeah. I mean, Darius, he's brilliant. I often talk about him.
Different class, wasn't he?
Yeah. He wasn't the fastest centre-back in the world, but if you gave him the ball, you knew you could trust him. And I don't think Reading have got them sort of players.
Yeah, they are desperate to get a new defender in.
It's not to say that we're slating the whole of the side. There are some really good footballers in that side. It was just a couple of key positions where invariably, if you look at the chances that have been created as a result of our own mistakes, those players are the players that are invariably around that. And you're looking at the goalkeeper as well.
Yeah, Ali Ohabsi. Certainly, I think he's here for the short term. I can't see him getting a new contract after this season.
I think the difference is now, if you watch young players being coached, they're all taught to have the ball and be comfortable with it. Whereas the players we're talking about are probably the other end of that, where they're more cut and thrust type players. And I think when you look at the young players now, they come in, they're neat on the ball, but they do lack strength and power and ability in the air a lot of the time. Whereas the older players, probably a bit better at that, but not so comfortable.
But someone like Jake Cooper, though, has come through an Eamon Dolan Academy, but he's been asked to play on the floor. They have been playing a very sort of continental-esque style, and yet he still doesn't seem...
But you can get away with it if you've got eight players or so that can play it. So, a bit like a couple's team, Sonko couldn't play football to save his life, but they never asked him to play football.
No.
It was, you defend, you catch players out, you tackle, and as soon as you get the ball, give it to someone who can play football. And I think Cooper's in that mould. He's big and strong, but if you ask him to take three touches on the ball, I'm panicking.
Yeah, right, moving on. Paul says, Rodgers played from the back. It doesn't work if you haven't got the players. I hope Stam gets some time and a goal scorer. Again, exactly what we've just talked about. Sam Richards brings up another player who I was just about to mention, actually. He says, Jordan Obita could learn a lot from the way Charlie Daniels plays at Bournemouth. We play a similar system currently. Obita's first thought is also to look back inside to centre-backs, putting them under pressure at times, which is possession-based. Bournemouth used their full-backs really well, giving the side a real attacking threat from wide.
I think part of that, Obita's inclination to go inside is purely because he doesn't have an option. If he doesn't have an option up the line or in sort of infield, as it were, what the players are clearly trying to do, and Stam has already has said this on plenty of occasions, is to move it across the back line and pull the opposition across ideally quite quickly. That's the only reason that I can think of why Obita consistently looks inside. And I think there's also an element of distrust, shall we say, with his teammates, in that if he will not pass it, and you'll notice this with Chris Gunter as well, they will not pass it to a player who has an opposition player within 2 or 3 yards of them. You know, and someone like John Swift, I would back to keep hold of that ball and manoeuvre that ball into the space. And when you play in this style of play, you need to have that trust. It's an Ajax way as well. You know, we know Yapstam came from Ajax. The Ajax way of playing is in little tight spaces with the ball, and they're instinctively taught to trust their fellow teammate. And there is an element of distrust at this moment in time, I think.
What did you make of Obita?
Again, I really thought Obita was going to be a top left back when he first came into the side, and his first season he was really good. But I don't think he's progressed at all, really. He sort of stayed exactly where he was.
I agree.
Got worse. He's all right. He's steady enough, but he's never going to pull up any trees or anything.
Yeah, I do still wonder if part of that is because he just doesn't want to play there.
Yeah, he's no Shaw, is he? Let's put it that way.
No, he's still very young. Still early. I think he's 21, 22. So he's got a long, hopefully a long career ahead of him in the game, but he's got to start making steps forward.
Things, he doesn't look like a winger either, does he? He doesn't look strong enough or good enough on the ball to be a winger.
No.
So he's going to be stuck at left back.
Challenge for you, Jordan. Prove us wrong.
Yeah, I hope I'm wrong, but...
Matt Castle. I think Ali Ohabsi needs to be replaced. Yes, he's a decent enough shot stopper, but his distribution is poor. He's not comfortable on the ball and doesn't have a calming influence on the team or the fans. I think it's even more important now that there is more of an emphasis on building from the back.
Yeah, again, I touched on it at the start of the show. I don't think you can ask Ohabsi to play football. Unfortunately, he's a very good shot stopper, but it worries me.
Yeah, the error clock is never too far away from being reset.
No.
Sorry, Ali. Lovely bloke. And you can see exactly why Stam keeps him around and why he's decided, well, for this season, I'm going to give him a go. It's really difficult to get any sort of idea of Yakola in goal against Plymouth.
Yeah.
Any sort of hints from what you did see?
Confident, certainly a ball player. You know, you look at his distribution and it was on a sixpence almost all the time. As they say, we have very little to do, though. Certainly nothing in the way of shot stopping. And almost nothing in the way of claiming crosses, so we can't really take much in much from it apart from just how decent his distribution was.
Would you be surprised to see him given a go?
No, I wouldn't, because I think it's unusual that a manager would buy a goalkeeper and not put him in the side. Even when Bond came here, he got his go, didn't he? Hmm. I think it'd be unusual not to see him come into the side at some point. I think he's just waiting for Absolute to make a real rick, and then he might replace him.
Probably won't have long to wait. I'm gonna gamble.
I'm waiting for the one to roll under his foot, don't you? Just when he's lifted his foot up, it's going to roll in their score. I can see it happening now.
Right. Denroy Mackay, do you think that Yap Stam will stick to his style of football regardless, as a certain Mr. Rogers did?
No, but then having said that, Brendan Rogers, very early on, altered his philosophy somewhat. If you take a look at the early games against Forest, Swansea, Newcastle, and then you take a look at the game against Barnsley that we won 3-1, there was a significantly more direct approach to the game. I think Saturday was a very big learning curve for Stam. And we'll see what happens. He obviously has his own philosophy, but you know, he's alluded to it in his pre-season interviews where we have a style of play, but we won't always be able to play that. Sometimes you have to grind out the results. Clearly, Saturday was a game where you needed to change the philosophy fairly quickly, because it was very evident that we were being put under a lot of pressure.
It goes back to what we were saying, though, doesn't it? It's that balancing act, and it's going to make or break him. But you can't just abandon it.
No, absolutely not.
But at the same point, you can't rigidly stick to it. So... I don't think, I agree with you, I don't think he's going to stick rigidly to it. I think he'd be foolish to do so. So we'll just have to see how it goes. And finally, to round off our mailbag this week, Alex Everson, which first teamer would you be least worried about losing before the end of August? Gunter, Gareth McCleary, Williams, etc. For me, Danny Williams in that group, just out of those three.
I don't know, I've always said on this show I like Williams. I think he does offer you something different.
He offers you a high wage.
Yeah, but I don't worry about how much getting paid as long as they're putting in the shift, you know. So I don't have to pay.
I do, it stops the signing other players.
Again, I wouldn't want to see any of them go, to be honest. I think G-Mac on his days is probably one of the best wingers in the league. Gunter, I've already spoke about how he plays, he's consistent. And Williams, again, he's a good footballer at this level. I wouldn't want to see any of them go. If I had to pick one, probably Gunter, because he's a right back.
Dave, I think you can expand it beyond this group, but any sort of... guy you've seen in the starting lineup for the first couple of weeks, you wouldn't be gutted to lose.
I think past history and comments within this particular show earlier lean heavily towards Chris Gunter. However, you still need that replacement.
Yeah. Very well put. Right, thank you for everyone who's got in touch via the mailbag. It's at the Tarlest End on Twitter and the Tarlest End at gmail.com for your emails. Also check us out on Facebook. We're at facebook.com/thetilehurstend. Right, one part to go. We'll move on to any other business. We'll look ahead to a couple of big championship games.
The Tilehurst End Podcast.
Any other business?
After the rather genteel start with Preston, Plymouth, and then a slightly bigger test at Wolves, they don't come much bigger than this, gents. Newcastle away, the pre-season title favourites at St James's Park. Just to ramp things up that little bit more, Newcastle haven't won. They've lost both their games so far. And it won't be long before the locals start getting restless. So what better time to play Reading? Traditional slump busters that we are. And then it's just a game against, you know, one of the teams that are looking great guns again. Last year's third place finishers, Brighton. So easy week for Yapstam, really. Let's start with the Newcastle game then. That is Wednesday night. As mentioned, they've lost their first two league games of the season. Has this got Newcastle home win written all over it, or am I just being cynical?
You'd think it would.
Yeah, I think so.
But having said that, they've lost two games on the trot and they're under pressure already. And we know what players are like at St James's Park when they've donned that black and white striped shirt and are under pressure. Having said that, again, this is one of those games where history seems to count for an unexplainable lot, shall we say. We've won once there in our history, our last visit. We've lost every single other visit that we've had there. I think it's something like 7 out of 8 that we've lost. And it's one of our, if not our worst away venue to visit, possibly. You could probably put Arsenal above Newcastle now. It has got, you can put as much spin on it as much as you like, and I'm sure Huddersfield fans were thinking the same thing on Saturday, and possibly Fulham the Friday before, that they were on for an annihilation, and it just hasn't happened. I mean, they've scored one goal, and they've conceded three, lost two games, which is just as many as we lost in 2005-06. Just put that out there. But yeah, having said that, as I say, you can put as much spin on it as you like, but I can't see anything other than a Newcastle win.
Westy?
Comfortable.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think pretty much the same. I don't see Reading going there and getting 3 points, let's put it that way. I think if we walked away with a draw, I think everyone would be happy with that. I think Newcastle are going to win games at some stage, and I think it will be on Wednesday night.
Can't disagree with either of you chaps. The bookies have it. Newcastle are 8-11 on. The draw is 11-4, and Reading, you can get 9-2.
Although on the flip side, I wouldn't be taking that odds on Newcastle. Because no. Those two games they've lost are not against top sides, are they?
Even though I've just said Newcastle, 9-2 looks a bit generous for me for Reading, because a scrappy 1-0 win is not out of the realms of possibility, especially because Reading have now started scoring from set pieces, which is always handy when you're looking to nick a result away from home. And as much as they were outplayed by Wolves, they were, you know, solidly hanging on for the best part of a half in that game. So I don't think it's out of the realms of the possibilities they nick a result, but
I think the only thing you can have in Reading's favour is if they go there and they keep the ball for half hour and bore everyone to death, then the Newcastle fans will be so angry.
And Reading have got the players now that can punish teams on the break. They didn't show it at Molineux, but when you've got Beerins, McCleary, you've got Mate, who looks a real threat coming off the bench as well. You've got people like Rackles you can bring on as well. They have got suddenly got a few players that, you know, can sort of hit teams on the break. It's just a case of getting that goal and actually getting the ball out of the back five, which they just didn't do.
Mm. Yeah, you talked me around. I'm betting on them now.
Hashtag gamble away. We don't need to say much about, you know, Newcastle's teams. You look through the squad lists, you know, you've got players like Anita, Dwight Gale, Moti Army, Jonjo Shelvey, even the players that play, people like Jack Colback being sat on the bench last week.
It's an attitude thing, though, isn't it? When you get relegated, you've got to hit the ground running. Newcastle clearly are still sulk mode.
Okay, we'll come on to our predictions for that one in just a minute. So after Newcastle away, it is a home game with Brighton. Brighton, good so far this season. They haven't conceded a goal. They drew with Derby and they beat Forest 3-0 on the telly, looking very good in the process.
They were lucky not to concede against Forest in the first half, though. I mean, Forest, I thought, were the better side in that first half until Brighton scored.
I mentioned the bookies' odds, and I found this, you know, very interesting. That Reading, by my basic math, are not favourites for this game.
They're not.
Brighton are 6-4. Reading are 9-5. For this one. So Brighton slight favourites in the eyes of the bookies. The draw is 9-5 as well. Can't think of too many games where in the Championship where Reading have not been favourites to win a game at home.
I think you might have found a few last year and the year before. But no, again, Brighton do look like a good side. They were last year. Probably unfortunate they didn't do a little bit better and get promoted. they're bang on it again, and again, it's going to be a tough home game for Reading to win, I think. A
lot of familiar faces as well in their squad, Dave. You've got Liam Rossini, you've got Steve Sidwell, Glenn Murray, and of course, most recent departure, Oliver Norwood.
Indeed, yeah. It's like a home from home for Reading, isn't it? Yeah, it's a good side. It's a very, very good Championship side. I mean, it's if anything, it actually looks a better Championship side than the one that Newcastle put out against Huddersfield. It's a slightly... is there such a thing as slightly infuriating? Very infuriating that Skalak isn't out of this match, given his rather ugly-looking challenge against Forest at 0-0 on Friday night that the referee completely missed. He then proceeded to pretty much run the show, old Skalak, and had the Portuguese chap on toast, pretty much. I'd have liked to have seen a retrospective three-match ban for that, because the referee clearly didn't see it. But hey-ho, you know, it is what it is. We'll have to deal with him, and if he does it again, hopefully the referee will see it.
Yeah, Glenn Murray has really, I think, put them over the edge for me, because I just thought they looked a little bit light up front last year, especially when Hamed wasn't scoring goals. I mean, Baldock's all right, but I mean, Murray's a proven goal. We saw it at Reading a couple of years ago. He still got it.
He got into goal-scoring chances or goal-scoring positions all the time, didn't he? And he's a goal scorer. And it's a little bit disappointing that we haven't managed to get him. You know, and likewise, Steve Sidwell as well. I would really like to have seen him come back.
Yeah, very much so. So
money talks, though, unfortunately.
Right, prediction time then. And the prediction league standings as they are, it's pretty much the same as it was last week. I'm still on top with 3 points. The two gentlemen in front of me, you both have a point that you picked up in the Preston game. The only man to get a point at Wolves was Johnny Williams, who said Wolves would win, but he said Wolves would win 2-1. The rest of us all went for draws or a Reading win. So, yeah, it's I lead by 2 points. No points for Charles Watts yet.
Early days.
I'll have to get off the mark. So, who wants to go first in this one?
0-3.
You've gone 0-3.
It's a 3-0 defeat for Reading, shall we say.
At Newcastle. Okay. Westy?
Yeah, 0-2.
So, two is that 2-0?
2-0 to Newcastle.
Okay. And I will go for a... I really can't go anything negative, really. But I think it'll be close in that. I think Newcastle squeak a 1-0.
This is a great way to end the show, isn't it? Really drag it down to the gutter.
So that's all right. I'm just going to go for a 2-1 defeat. Slightly more positive against Brighton.
I'll see a goal.
Okay. Right, so Brighton, what are you going for?
I think Brighton will win 2-1.
2-1, so that's a 1-2. Westy?
I'm concerned we might get stuffed here, so I'm going to say 3-0 Brighton.
3-0 Brighton. That's a 0-3. And I'm going to be positive and go for a heartwarming 1-1 draw. So there you go. You cannot blame us if this doesn't go well. I can't remember his exact predictions. They're on my phone, but I can tell you that Johnny went for 2 defeats as well.
As I said off air, it just drags the show down to the gutter right at the end there.
Indeed.
We're just realistic.
We are realistic.
And that's how Johnny won this league. We've got to win this competition, you know.
We had this discussion at work today, and my mate said Johnny won it by going negative.
Yeah.
And I said I was going to go negative, then bottled it and decided to go positive.
Yep. Charles stuck to his positive guns and saw a massive lead collapse late in the season. So
let's put it this way, we hope we're wrong, don't we?
Indeed. Right, well, thank you very much again to everyone who's listened to the show this week. I joke at the start about just downloading, but if you do make this far, thank you. We do appreciate it, and especially to those of you who put your feedback in. And if you are one of those select few that are supporting us through crowdfunding, an even bigger thank you. It really does help out. It's provided us with lots of nice shiny new equipment, and by continuing your support we can replace things when they go wrong, and
Wim's moved to a bigger house as well. I don't know if that
I don't think that's quite where the crowdfunding money's going.
I'm sure it did. I was only being amusing at the end there, because we dragged it down to the gutter before that.
If we get more money in the coffers, maybe we can persuade Wesley to come back more often.
If we get more money in the coffers, I'll be moving.
But no, seriously, thank you to everyone who has. Like I said, there are still little bits and pieces we want to do. So if you do want to support it, you know, we're not asking, we're asking for as much or as little as you care to give. But there are rewards if you go to the upper echelons.
Have we still got mugs, Wim?
We do.
All right, because I've got some guys
who
wanted one. Yeah,
hey. We have a select group. Basically, the problem is I have to sort of order them in every time, rather than we don't just have sort of a direct shop or anything. So I think I've got 5 or 6 left, so I might put a couple on.
You're going to use the spare room to stock up.
Yeah, it's more spending the funds as well. I don't know how many people want an unprofessional joke of a mug.
I do, I haven't got one yet.
There you go. Do you know what? I think I might be able to give you one.
Thank you.
Unbelievable. I got to make before you.
Right. So, yeah, thank you again. Also, if you haven't checked out the interview with Kevin Doyle from last week, go and do so. Some great stories, one in particular with Noel Hunt, worth downloading for. We're hoping we're going to have another interview next week. I'm just waiting for final confirmation from the man himself. It is a recent royal. I won't name him just in case it all falls apart. But fingers crossed we'll have an interview. And stay tuned to the Twitter because we will be inviting your questions once that is all confirmed. That is up. That's us done. I said hopefully I'll be back with Charles on Friday again. Apologies for no show last week. It's one of those sort of things where if things fall apart on the day, we can't do much about that. But hopefully I will sit down with Charles then. In the meantime, we'll all be back next week to hopefully discuss at least one positive result, no matter what we're predicting here. So, gents, thanks for joining me. Westy, thank you for dropping by.
Always a pleasure.
And we'll get you on again. I said you're not a regular anymore because life's getting in the way.
As usual.
But we'll certainly get your voice on a few more times over the season. But thank you very much.
Lovely. Good to be back.
Right. And that, with that, we go. And then one thing left to say. Come on, you are.